普京准备与北约协商欧洲导弹部署和军演问题，美欧预俄采取行动降低紧张。国会两院议员推出议案，要求在美上市公司披露是否有中共组织。北京冬奥争议不断，前加拿大运动员分享对奥运会意义的看法。
各位观众大家好，我是卡拉，欢迎收看美国观察。俄罗斯总统普京周二表示，已经准备好与美国及其北约盟友就欧洲的导弹部署和军事演习问题进行谈判。美国拜登总统表示欢迎普京采取外交途径的意愿。今天的节目中我们一同关注。美国观察的节目热线已经开通，欢迎您拨打0021-202-920-4990给我们留言，跟我们分享您对节目的看法，告诉我们您希望看到的节目内容。针对俄罗斯表示已经从乌克兰边境撤回部分军队，拜登总统表示没有看到俄罗斯军队自乌克兰边境撤军，反而持续维持在威胁状态，冲突或一触即发。拜登总统说，欢迎克里姆林宫宣布采取外交途径的意愿，但是再次严厉警告入侵乌克兰的严重后果。详情请美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅来介绍。耀毅。
在拜登总统星期二的下午呢，在白宫呢东厅针对乌克兰以及俄罗斯的局势来发表这个演说。在说话当中呢，他说他欢迎俄罗斯昨天愿意采取外交途径，并且从这个边境部分撤军的说法，但是他也强调说，并没有看到事态是如俄罗斯政府方面所说的在发展。我们看看拜登总统今天在白宫怎么说。
The Russian Defense Minister reported today.That some military units are leaving their positions near Ukraine. That would be good, but we have not yet verified that. We have not yet verified the Russian military units are returning to their home bases. Indeed, our analysts indicate that they remain very much in a threatening position. And the fact remains, right now, Russia has more than 150,000 troops encircling Ukraine and Belarus and along Ukraine's border.An invasion remains distinctly possible.
那拜登总统说呢，他欢迎这个克里姆林宫说要采取外交途径的说法，不过他也呼吁普京要考虑美国及俄罗斯两国未来的发展以及全球的安全稳定，来采取外交途径。但他同时也警告，美国并没有要跟俄罗斯寻求冲突，但是只要俄罗斯对美国人以及乌克兰动手，这个美国以及盟友们一定会反击。我们看看拜登总统在白宫是怎么说的。
But let there be no doubt. If Russia commits this breach by invading Ukraine, responsible nations around the world will not hesitate to respond. We do not stand for freedom. Where it is at risk today will surely pay a steeper price tomorrow.
那拜登总统说呢，每一个国家都有捍卫自己主权与领土的权利。那么他现在呢，美国也更在跟这个北约的盟国们一起来合作。我们知道他昨天跟英国首相约翰逊通了电话，今天他跟法国总统马克龙也在通了电话。马克龙则是在前几天已经前往了这个莫斯科与普京见面。那么今天是德国总理肖兹前往莫斯科与普京见面。那么目前呢，我们看到北约盟国领导人也是每天一位前往乌克兰进行访问，希望能够借此来降低当地的。局势。最后呢，拜登总统表示，他也了解到，如果一旦这个美国跟俄罗斯方面发生冲突的话，美国本身也会受到影响，包括美国的军队、他们的家人，还有美国的能源价格。他说呢，现在已经采取的能源控制价格的这个采取的手段以及政策，同时呢，也会跟国会进行合作，来确保美国的能源价格能够保持稳定。卡拉，
好了，感谢耀毅从白宫发来的报道。美国联邦参议员布莱克伯恩和卢比奥星期一宣布推出了一项要求在美国上市的公司确认其运营中是否有中共组织的法案，名为禁止中国共产党行使诡计通过未登记的政权存在而隐瞒股东与等效方法的法案，只是美国证券交易委员会要求在美国交易所上市的公司确认其运营中是否有中国共产党的组织。该法案还要求公司详细说明中共组织对其公司治理决策的参与情况，并披露公司是否负有任何信托责任，包括外国信托责任。 卢比奥参议员认为，该法案为北京通过加深对美国金融市场的影响来颠覆美国的企图提供了一个常识性的解决方案。来自纽约州的国会众议员坦尼也在众议院推出了相关的法案。美国国防部称，美国海军正在南中国海打捞上个月坠海的一架 F-35C 型战斗机。五角大楼发言人科比星期一在例行记者会上证实，海军的打捞工作正在进行。美国海军上个月说，第七舰队的一架 F-35C 型战机1月24日在南中国海训练时发生意外坠海，飞行员安全弹出驾驶舱并获得直升机营救。美军如何敢在敌对国家采取行动之前打捞这架价值高达1亿美元的第五代战机，成为人们关注的焦点。中国声称对几乎整个南中国海拥有主权。观察人士说，如果这架飞机落入中国或俄罗斯之手，多项先进技术可能会被收集和利用。塔利班掌管阿富汗政权已经6个月，由于没有国际社会的承认，阿富汗经济面临崩溃，国际援助却也迟迟无法到达。喀布尔街头墙壁上布满塔利班的宣传信息，而女性的身影也四处难寻。来看美国之音记者坦奇姆发回的报道。
I was in Kabul exactly 6 months ago, 15th of August 2021, when Taliban entered. The situation today is completely different. The city looks different. The city feels different. The biggest difference you see is on the walls of the city. All the murals that decorated Kabul's walls are gone. They've been painted over by messages of Taliban and Taliban flags. The other big difference you see in the city is the absence of women. While you still see some women in bazaars, but they're not, the quantity is not the same as before. We used to see women in every office, in government buildings, in government ministries. This time when I came and I went to, for example, the foreign ministry, there was not a single woman there, to the point where the women's toilet was locked and out of order. That should tell you how no woman had used that for a long time. Female journalists told us that they cannot go to certain ministries and offices because they are not allowed to enter. The situation for press freedom has changed dramatically. Local journalists are severely self-censoring. They used to be, it used to be a vibrant media scene in Afghanistan where local journalists would severely criticize the government and its performance. They tell me now that they would dare not do that with the Taliban in power. The country is also facing an economic collapse because the Taliban are not recognized by anyone. The banking system is not working. International aid is not reaching everyone. Businesses are not working. We talked to shopkeepers and small business owners who are saying that rather than the business making the money, they now have to borrow money to feed their families. We talked to people who were so desperate that they were selling their daughters, or some people sold their kidney to be able to feed their children. They said that they have had nothing but dry bread and water. Their children are hungry. Their children cry for food. The situation in Afghanistan is really bad. International aid organizations say that 90% of Afghans are now below the poverty line, which means that they're making less than $2 a day. They're asking, I mean, last month in January, the United Nations launched its biggest ever appeal for a single country, nearly $5 billion. But while the aid is on its way, people in Afghanistan are desperate for help. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Kabul.
欢迎继续收看美国观察。北京冬奥会赛程过半，这届充满争议的奥运会也引发了人们对于奥运的意义的质疑。前加拿大长跑运动员布鲁斯基德曾经参加过1964年的东京奥运会，他在多伦多大学担任体育与公共政策名誉教授的同时，也是加拿大奥委会的荣誉成员。基德教授日前在与美国之音记者平章的对话中表示，奥运会的意义在于将人们带到一起，就彼此之间的分歧进行对话，运动员的言论自由应该受到保护。当奥运与人权、体育与政治等各种关系日益错综复杂，这还是他依旧坚信的奥林匹克理想。
Thank you very much, Professor Kidd, for taking my interview today. As we speak, the Beijing Winter Olympics has kicked off. We've heard so far from some complaints from the participants about the strict COVID rules undertaken by the organizers. Some call them unreasonable, some are crying for losing their chances to compete or about the quarantine conditions. How do you see the extra stress put on the athletes in this year's games because of the pandemic and because of the way that China uses to deal with it?
I agree that the athletes are under terrible stress. Certainly the athletes who arrived and were placed into quarantine were experienced very difficult extreme conditions from everything I've read. For the athletes in the Olympic Village, it's very, very strict conditions, and for the journalists too. And that means that this is not a real Olympics or a full Olympics or the kind of Olympics that every Olympic athlete and person in the world wants. That being said, I take the seriousness of the pandemic as very real. And I know that China has been very strict all over China, not just in Beijing for the Olympics. I don't have a strong feeling about whether those restrictions are unreasonable. What I most want to say is that I admire the athletes from all countries who are determined to compete well under these terrible circumstances and are, you know, closing their eyes and ears to the restrictions and just focusing on their events and focusing on their interactions with other athletes when they can.
Sure, it's not easy to pursue their Olympic dreams under such circumstances. Another concern raised by those attending the games is about cybersecurity. Athletes are required to use the My 2022 app to monitor their health before and during the Olympics. As we know, the FBI has urged people to leave their personal cell phone at home and be wary of any applications required by the Chinese government, as they might be used to steal personal information or install tracking tools. Do you share the same concern?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I think people have to be prepared that what they say and what they communicate will be reviewed. It's very scary for many people. And I've never had to operate in that circumstance, so I don't know what I would do in those. I guess I would be proud of everything I did and said and let the listeners hear that, but, you know, that's a luxury of somebody in a liberal democratic country.
We've seen the Olympic officials and the Chinese government warned the athletes against, staging any protests at the games, saying that they could violate the Olympic rules as well as the Chinese law and subject to punishment. So, but some activists are urging the athletes to use their platform, to use their celebrity to speak out. So as a former Olympian, if you would give advices to those attending this year's games, what would you say? Should they speak out or should they just keep subject on mind but not on lips?
Well, I wouldn't tell them what to do or say. I respect that is their right, but I would not discourage them if they wanted to speak out. I think that that during the last couple of years that the athletes of the world have successfully won the right for free open expression at Olympic and Winter Olympic Games, and that right should be protected, and the IOC should protect that right. As you will remember, in Tokyo last summer, a few athletes, not a lot, but a significant number, spoke out on a variety of concerns. And I think the same rights should be enjoyed in Beijing. These are Beijing's games, but they're also the world's games, and they belong to the Olympic world. And every member of that community should be treated with the rights of all Olympians and should not be subject to punitive Chinese law.
But some people argue that we should keep politics out of sports. Otherwise, it's against the spirit of Olympics. What would be your response to that?
Well, I think that's a misreading of the Olympic ideal. The Olympic ideal is to bring everyone together from all over the world, despite and because of our differences, but not to ignore those differences in political systems or religious beliefs or feelings, but to make those differences a subject of what we can discuss with each other. And so my interpretation of the Olympic spirit is that because we have these differences, we should get together, respect people for these differences, and have a peaceful discussion about them. But to go to a place like China and not talk about China, or go to the United States and not talk about the things that bother us about the United States, or come to Canada and not talk about the things that bother other people about Canada, that's not in the Olympic spirit. We should do this respectfully and peacefully, but we should have the right to have those discussions. I worry that COVID and the health measures make that less possible, but that doesn't rule out the basic right of Olympians to speak freely on what's on their mind.
So how do you see the Rule 50 of the IOC Charter? Is this time to change it?
Well, everyone is holding their breath. I don't know whether athletes will say things that will upset the Chinese government, but if they say them in the spirit of the revised Rule 50, in a respectful way, but an honest way, then the IOC should protect them. And as I've said and written, if the Chinese government steps, on the field or into those press conferences and goes to arrest any athlete, then the IOC should say the games are over, we cancel them right now. Because those are basic Olympic rights that should be protected. And I'd like to think that the Chinese government, big and powerful as it is, I mean, I laugh that they are so afraid of 2,000 Olympic athletes saying what's on their mind. That's nuts.
We have over 2,500 athletes competing in this Beijing Winter Olympics. And as you just mentioned, some of them seem to have a pretty good time over there. You know, they post happy videos on their social media, praising the facilities, you know, showing gratitude to the volunteers, or just sharing the vibe theirs. And sometimes those athletes are criticized for giving credit to the authoritarian regime for playing into the Chinese government's propaganda. Some critics are even saying they shouldn't be there in the first place. They should have boycotted these games. Do you think it's fair to those athletes?
No, I don't. I mean, these are the Olympic Games for most of those athletes. This will be their only Olympics. They should go and enjoy them. It's taken great courage to go under these very difficult circumstances. They've had to train in terrible circumstances, as we all know. They're meeting with people who are like them from all over the world. They're meeting with the Chinese volunteers and the Chinese officials and having enjoyable conversations with that. And I think that's what the Olympic spirit should be. I'm critical of what the Chinese government has done with respect to the Uyghurs in Hong Kong and Tibet myself. But the Olympic spirit is, even though because of these differences, Olympic sport should go ahead. And we should go peacefully to talk. We shouldn't avoid going to China or any country which has different political ideas and a different record. If there was a high standard for human rights in every aspect set out by the United Nations Declaration on Universal Human Rights or the other charters, and that was the bar for awarding the Olympic Games, the Olympics would be in Sweden all the time. It'd never come back to Canada. It would never go to the United States. It'd never go to China. I mean, that's not who we are. The Olympic movement is about having sport around the world and in a peaceful, respective way, interacting with people unlike ourselves.
So apparently the athletes are put in a very difficult situation, but you don't blame IOC for that. You don't think it's because the IOC made a wrong choice of host the country in 2015?
Well, they had a very limited choice, and they had little other. I am sure that the IOC wishes they had that choice again. But I'm sure they also wish there were other bid cities. The IOC has always sought to engage national communities and host cities without strict requirements around human rights. In the last 10 or 15 years, people are urging the consideration of human rights in the staging of Olympic Games. But we have not agreed to that. And I don't think there is a worldwide consensus on what that means. We're struggling towards that. But in the meantime, the old ideal of reaching out to everyone still makes a lot of sense to me in this difficult world.
Yes, people used to hope that Olympics would bring positive changes to the host nations who, originally might be lagging behind in democracy or human rights.
I never believed that. What I believed is that we could, it's unrealistic to think that 2,800 athletes are going to change a country of 1.2 billion people in 3 weeks of sports. That's unrealistic. But what we can do is contribute in our own way to a dialogue between different peoples.
Speaking of bringing people together, it seems like the nationalism is playing an even bigger and a bigger role in the games. If we look at this Beijing Winter Olympics, all the controversy around the nationality of some athletes who was raised up in States but competing for China, or the social media clash between Chinese and South Korean netizens over some games and open ceremony. So is the Olympics really a bridge to bring people together, or is merely just a reflection of how divided we are right now?
Well, that's a good question. And I think there is justification for everything you say. And as one of my friends, John McAloon of the University of Chicago, says, the Olympics is a multiple narrative. There are many simultaneous stories. And And on the one hand, there's been a disturbing increase in nationalism. On the other hand, there's been an encouraging reaching out. At a time of horrible nationalism and xenophobia, the idea of bringing the world together under peaceful sport is very encouraging to me and very important to me. If you look at the way that athletes in Beijing are hugging each other, high-fiving each other, posing for photographs with each other from very different countries, that shows the spirit of internationalism.
You know, the IOC has been criticized for closing up with authoritarian regimes. They said probably that's because they haven't put enough pressure on China. They haven't urged China to live up to their promises and hold China accountable for not doing so. Do you agree?
You know, I do agree with that, although I don't know what's happening behind the scenes. There is an IOC tradition of behind-the-scenes diplomacy, so we don't know for sure. But I don't think, but on the public face of it, I do not think the IOC has done enough to push the Chinese government to an acceptance of all cultures in the games.
Why it is the case? Because, you know, undeniable, China is a huge market. There is something, you know, the Olympics or any other international sports events. And, you know, their sponsors have to take into consideration if they want to spend, if they want to make themselves more relevant. So how should they, you know, choose or strike balance?
Well, that's a very difficult question. I would say in this, well, I'm critical of the IOC. I wouldn't want Thomas Bach's job because he is getting pressure from all sides. He has an obligation to see that these games go through. He doesn't want to totally anger the host government because they have enormous power. He wants sponsors and investors to continue their investments. The revenue of many sports organizations around the world, winter and summer, is dependent upon the IOC in these games. So there's a lot resting on this, and he is being understandably cautious about not picking any fights. I think the questions you ask are good questions. They're not easy for the IOC to answer.
Would you call for any reforms to the Olympic movement or any changes to the IOC?
Well, the IOC has promised for 2024 strict requirements for human rights in the staging of the Olympics, not in all aspects of French society, but in the staging of the Olympics in Paris. That's a good place to start. I would also like to see human rights for participants realized in all Olympic competing countries. Not for everybody in those countries, but for the people who are involved in sport. Those would be two very difficult challenges, but they're within sport, within the ability of sport to affect change. I think the IOC should try harder to realize that. And if that happens over the next 10 or 15 years, I think that would be a big breakthrough.
以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容。感谢您的收看，我们下次再见。